Okay, you're listening to CKUT Radio. I'm Joe Broadhurst in Montreal, Quebec, and I'm pleased to be joined on the phone with Bill Conroy. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well.
You have been leading an investigation regarding the DEA in Bogota, and you have discovered several revelations regarding their participation with narco traffickers. Can you first of all tell my listeners your background and when you got started with Narco News, which is the agency that you're currently working with?
Yeah, well, I've been working in journalism for 20-odd years, and Narco News is a more or less a collaborative, a nonprofit. And I've been writing for them for a couple years now. I forget, two and a half years. And it's journalists from all over the country, well, really, the hemisphere, that have kind of come together to pursue journalism outside the constraints of the commercial industries that tend to constrain what can be printed sometimes in the press, or what's pursued anyway. And so that's why I've been working on projects for them. And this latest one concerning Colombia comes up out of for the last 5 or 6 years I've been following different law enforcement related stories, mainly focused around corruption and dysfunction. So it's almost natural that, you know, I've developed sources and so forth. And we got leaked a memo at the beginning of this year. It was an internal Justice Department memo written by an attorney for a wiretap unit with the Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs section, essentially laying out a bunch of allegations of corruption in DEA Bogota, linking agents there to leaking documents, to being on the payroll of narco traffickers, to, you know, being complicit actually in the murders of informants who were inside these narco operations and were deemed threats. So that was the nature of the memo that came out earlier this year. It was actually written in December 2004, and the memo was written by a guy named Thomas Kent, and it was actually written internally to try to get some investigation oversight into these problems, and it got basically covered up and shut down, and somehow it leaked out of the bureaucracy in Washington and made it, you know, to Narco News.
What it looks like we have is a cover up. Can you just tell my listeners, the nature of the Kent memo was to expose corruption, and there was a serious cover up after that memo was found. Can you just kind of go over the nature and the players that are involved with this?
Sure. Real briefly, the memo dealt with a lot of undercover operations, so it doesn't mention specific names. So a lot of the subsequent reporting we've been doing is piecing together the leads that are in these allegations, and we've had quite a bit of success because some additional documents have surfaced. But essentially in the Kent memo, there's four major allegations. One dates back to 2000 in an operation called Caliman that was targeting North Valley cartel traffickers in Colombia. And as part of doing that, they ran across this trail of corruption going back to the U.S. Embassy. And so Caliman kind of morphed into something called Rainmaker, which was actually going after some of these corrupt players. And as soon as that started happening, that particular DEA operation got, you know, sabotaged or torpedoed by some players on the allegedly corrupt side of the fence who used their positions in the DEA to kind of turn the tables on these individuals who I guess you would call whistleblowers. Then another set of allegations surfaces, you know, basically a couple years later, as we see the dates coming out in this latest memo, and that involved a separate DEA. A group of DEA individuals, and one of those allegations dealt with an informant they were cultivating to, basically narc on the FARC, which is a left-wing guerrilla group down there. And it was a deal they were trying to set up to sell communications equipment to the FARC. And that the FARC is kind of the backdrop. That's not really what was important about that allegation. Essentially, the person they had cultivated was a high-level member of the North Valley cartel, and as they kept trying to get information from him, use him in different capacities, Bogota DEA agents in that office kept trying to sabotage that investigation, and ultimately did so by exposing this guy. His name was Nelson Urrego, which the Miami Herald Spanish edition actually ferreted out his name. They've been kind of following this after the Kent memo came out. The point being, he was exposed by somebody leaking classified information out of the Bogota embassy to, you know, some narco traffickers who then made it clear to Yurigo that he was, you know, at risk. We know who you are. And then another allegation that's part of the Kent memo is there was a group of individuals working, again, with some informants in Bogota, and they had discovered this almost out of the, like, out of the movie Traffic. It was an acrylic that they were using to infuse cocaine in it so they could shape it like different things. And the DEA had discovered this, but they couldn't figure out how to extract the cocaine to prove that this was going on. They needed it was pretty complicated chemistry. And these informants in Bogota knew how to do it, so they were trying to fly them back to the States to get them to help them, you know, figure out the formula. Well, in the process of doing that, these guys got, the informants got jailed down there again by some alleged duplicity on the part of Bogota DEA agents. And ultimately, one of them, you know, was kidnapped and murdered after he was released. They put him in jail, and then so these informants got taken out of the picture, and that particular investigation fell apart. And then there's a third allegation, which is basically stateside here up in Colorado. That's where Kent came in, and he was involved in a money laundering investigation. And in one of their wiretaps, they ran across evidence of a high-level DEA official discussing money laundering for the AUC, which is the right-wing paramilitary operation down there. And that's kind of when Kent ran into his problems. He was working as part of a team, and he brought this revelation to the attention of the proper people in the Department of Justice, and their essentially internal affairs organization, which is the Office of Inspector General, began investigating it. They got quite far on it. Then DEA came into the picture, and they had their own version of that, internal affairs, and they basically started, according to Kent, started sabotaging that the OIG's investigation, and someone pretty far up the chain apparently pulled the plug on the whole thing, and the OIG inspector who had made headway on all these corruption allegations was taken off the case. And actually, according to Kent, the original money laundering investigation that led to these revelations was shut down by DEA. So at that point, you know, Kent put together some of these pieces, talking to some of these other DEA agents who had run across similar trails of corruption, and that's when he wrote his memo. And he wrote it to, basically the head of his section, the Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs section, and that individual didn't do any. I mean, his memo went nowhere. He was calling for a, you know, public integrity section investigation, and, you know, basically somebody to really look into this. This was way out of hand. Ironically, the person he wrote the memo to is now, like, the number two person in DEA. So in the course of all this, all these people that were bringing these allegations forward in one way or another were retaliated against. And some of the very people they were making the allegations against actually got promoted or actually did better in their careers. So that's unfortunately the lesson all too often, at least in the States here, of whistleblowers. They tend to find themselves on the wrong end of the eight ball on these things. That's the Kent memo. Since then, we've continued to pursue this story. We're trying to get the facts as opposed to wild speculation about what this could mean. And some additional documents have surfaced, including another very long DEA report of investigation that came out of actually a separate court case in Miami that was filed in the court, unredacted, which is unbelievable. Someone didn't pay attention, or someone did that on purpose. I have no idea, but it had, you know, complete document with all these names, and it was a series of interviews with narco traffickers and DEA agents, FBI agents, all focused around the first allegation in the Kent memo, the Caliman operation. And you can't really draw conclusions from it. It was really an investigation targeting the whistleblower. But in the course of that, there's a bunch of additional information that comes up from these interviews, such as one of the people working on the DEA team targeting the Bogota corruption discovered allegedly that one of the high-level DEA agents in Bogota was on the payroll of a person who's since been indicted, is now dead, was murdered for narco trafficking. And there were additional allegations that mirrored it quite closely what Kent was saying in his memo. The latest thing that just came out was, and that we wrote about on May 15th, was a document that's not supposed to exist. In the Kent memo, there's an allegation that he is part of the second allegation where involving the FARC and the communications equipment and the narco trafficker who got access to classified DEA information to expose the informant in that operation. Well, basically, there was a polygraph done on that narco trafficker, because as it turns out, he was also a DEA informant. So they brought him up to Miami and did a polygraph and asked him point blank, how did you get these documents, essentially in the format of a polygraph? And he confessed to the fact that, he got them out of the U.S. Embassy. This particular document is a report on the whole polygraph. And it goes into detail about, for example, it claims in the course of this polygraph, one of the charges is that narco traffickers knew a day in advance with coordinates when DEA, Colombia National Police, were going to fumigate the marijuana cocoa fields. Thus, they were always prepared to protect the fields. And then it goes on to say, during the interview with the DEA inspectors, this informant, who was also a narco trafficker, stated that over the last few years, he or she had been able to obtain between 50 to 60 documents from the DEA Bogota country office at will. And this is not a new revelation to us, as we met with the DEA Miami Group Supervisor David Tinsley, the guy who headed up the Cali Man, on January 2000, whereas Tinsley related to us that he had an informant that was obtaining documents from inside the Bogota embassy and showed us an original document, not a photocopy. And so this, and what's ironic about this, in the Kent memo, it says this polygraph was done, and the DEA, OPR, their internal affairs, told the polygrapher to not say anything about the report, to essentially say it doesn't exist. And the polygrapher had some integrity. He filed this report with his supervisor, but it was buried, and all of a sudden it surfaces. And so it's additional evidence that, what Kent was saying in his memo is not made up out of whole cloth. It's a document that he references in those allegations. It turns out to be exactly and precisely as he says it would be. And it further implicates the U.S. Embassy in Bogota in this corruption scandal. And that's essentially where we're at right now. And we're continuing to pursue it. So there's at this point, multiple documents, multiple sources, they all, make very similar, essentially the same allegations, and they all, so far, match up, yet nothing's being done. DEA continues to claim that this is all unfounded. Initially when we reported this in January, DEA issued a statement saying, we take the, charges in the memo that were, it was revealed in the narco news story very seriously, and we're going to investigate it fully. Well, 9 days later, literally 9 days later, they claimed they had already looked into it and that they were all unfounded. And then, of course, that the mainstream media here picked up on that and wrote a story about the Kent memo saying DEA investigates charges and memo and they're, found to have no merit, essentially. And that's kind of, I think they were more interested in getting the spin out in the media to head off anyone from really looking into this. That was my read on it. That's essentially where it stands today. A few folks in the mainstream media have actually, very few, but some, particularly the Nuevo Herald, which is the Spanish edition of the Miami Herald, have actually done some additional investigation in this and uncovered, things that again, substantiate all the original allegations. And that's really the only mainstream paper that's put any investigative weight into it. And finally, what I'd say, what really needs to happen, because we're just journalists, we don't have subpoena power, right? Somebody in Congress needs to take this seriously and do some oversight. But anyone following the news here now knows that Congress essentially has become a puppet regime of the executive branch in many ways. And there, I don't think there's been a serious oversight hearing other than baseball steroids in the last 5 years.
And what exactly has happened to Mr. Kent? Since he's
which is another thing, because they always attacked the messenger, and you would think if this guy was a kook or way off base that they would have buried him somewhere or fired him, but he's actually an assistant U.S. attorney in Nashville, so he's in a very important position in terms of trying cases. So if the guy is either doesn't have any veracity or can't be trusted or doesn't know what he's doing, why would they put him in that kind of position? Obviously, he is not that way. If they could have found something on him, they would have, I think. So he's still in the Justice.
There's another player in this involved, and his name's Ed Fields. Can you tell me? Is he the one that did the polygraph? Is that correct?
Yeah, well, Ed Fields was in there's essentially four major allegations, and Ed is involved with the last two. And yes, he was the agent that was involved with the investigation involving the informant and the FARC and the communications equipment that led to the polygraph. And, you know, basically, he was involved in helping to cultivate that particular informant, Nelson Urrego, who was, in a position to try to set up this sting on the FARC. But see, that I'm not quite certain is really their concern as much, because Urrego, in his position, I mean, another thing about Urrego, this informant, was he was involved in a major scandal in Colombia with the previous administration before Uribe, in which he supposedly provided money to the presidential candidate, you know, in that sampler, in that election, and that was big news in Colombia. It almost brought down the administration. So he has connections, very high connections, and knows a lot of things. So the suspicion is, anyway, the reason they were trying to torpedo him, expose him, and compromise him is because if he started talking, he could do a lot of damage to a lot of powerful people that are involved in various money-making graft schemes that are prevalent in the narco-trafficking world when it comes to the interplay between government politicians and law enforcement and, you know, the big money in that business.
Well, and also, if the U.S. is involved with, if the DEA is involved with this at all, this would lead, according to your article, this would lead back to Ernesto Samper's presidential election campaign, correct? And so there would be the issue of the U.S. somehow funneling money through drugs and through the DEA, or at least providing help that would enable them to create money to give to this a presidential election. Is that correct?
Well, see, I'm real careful at drawing those lines. The way I look at it is, there's pretty clear indications there's corruption, and whether it's an orchestrated, centralized government plan, or whether it's just a bunch of people acting in their self-interest, and this is leading to these problems, you know, is any motivation is always the hardest thing to get at. But the truth of the matter is it probably extends even into the current administration based on some of the things that are coming up behind the scenes, that what you have is essentially an alliance, according to these documents and various sources, of the Colombian National Police, basically law enforcement. There's a separate parallel scandal that surfaced down there involving the DAS, which is the Colombian version of kind of the secret police, if you will. They also are accused of cooperating with the narco traffickers. Okay, so you have this alliance of law enforcement, narco traffickers, and now allegedly corrupt U.S. law enforcers all coming together to form what one informant involved in all this called the Devil's Cartel. It's like the perfect narco-trafficking organization. Now, by extension, Uribe, the current administration, is in charge of all this. In other words, these law enforcement agencies that are corruptly involved, along with the paramilitaries, which in many ways are the same as the military down there. They wear military uniforms for the Colombian government and then act in a paramilitary fashion on other matters. So if you have this close alliance, you start to say, well, how involved is the Colombian government itself in this business? It's in propagating this business so it can stay in power. And if you start pulling the string on the DEA corruption and the embassy corruption down there, it leads to all this other stuff. And that's where I think you got more of a ground to stand on to say, why would there be a cover-up? Well, maybe because they know if they pull on that string too hard, start exposing the corruption within our own agencies down there, it leads to the corruption and how far up the food chain it goes in the Colombian government, and that obviously destabilizes that government or puts it in a very bad light, and that's a particular government we seem intent on propping up. I think that's probably the more likely scenario. Not that we're using this to, you never know, but that at a minimum I think there would be a concern that this corruption goes pretty far up that Colombia, the current administration, essentially, de facto, is a narco state, and we're propping it up. And to, you know, have that perceived in the public that we're propping up a regime corruptly involved with narco trafficking in the middle of the drug war and everything that entails and all the people we have in prison would be the height of international hypocrisy.
Okay, so at this point, are you hopeful that the Justice Department will step in?
Not at all.
No?
Not at all. In fact, that's the problem. See, the Justice Department, well, DEA is under the Justice Department, and the whole problem here is that all these corruption allegations, and the Kemp memo actually at one place links people in Washington, D.C. to this. We don't know who they are, but alleged there were players in D.C. that were involved in this. But the Justice Department isn't going to investigate itself. It's like sending the fox in to check on the chickens. It just isn't going to happen. You need an outside entity to do this, and that's where, you know, that's what Congress is there for, to do oversight of these agencies. But it's just absolutely lacking in the current atmosphere here. So what that does is allow these types of things to occur without consequence, and that just makes, you know, the environment for corruption to breed and multiply, you know, even better, because there's no consequence to it, because they know no one's going to call the shots. There's, you know, it would be a lot of people would have egg on their face at a minimum if these allegations were really investigated and found to be true.
And we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars being given to Colombia to fight the drug war. So if there's corruption involved with that, one would need to think about that.
Well, Joe, just think about this. Even if this one allegation that this came up in this latest document, that information on, you know, the fumigation or when they're going to go spray the crops, and most of the crops that they're spraying down there supposedly are to stop the growth of the coca plants that lead to this infusion of, you know, and we got to ask yourself, they've been spraying down there for years, and the level of cocaine coming in the country has not, you know, been affected. And the argument down there is what they're doing is they're spraying all the poor farmers' fields and ruining their health and their communities and so forth, but it's not making a dent in the narco traffic or in the fields of the narco traffickers. Well, if it's true that they're getting leaked advance notice of when these planes are coming to spray their fields, then they can arm the fields and prevent those planes from spraying those fields. Then obviously they're not spraying the fields. I mean, so we're spending all this money to supposedly suppress the growth of the coca plant, and all the intelligence that's used to find these plants is being leaked right back to the people that are growing them. And so you go spray some other crops down there so you can justify the big budget. I mean, that's, you know, something right out of a, you know, it was a movie with a guy riding a missile. I'm forgetting his name right now, but it's the biggest farce in the world.
I've been joined by Bill Conroy from Narco News, narconews.com. I appreciate all of the work that you are doing and all of your colleagues are doing at Narco News in following this story and others regarding narco trafficking, and I wish you luck in the future.
Okay, I appreciate it.